Welcome back to Stories from the Ashes, where we pontificate on good books and the stories that define and refine us. I'm here today with Charlessa and our special guest, Lauren Warnemendi. Did I say that right? Yay! Lauren was just explaining to me how that is actually what they considered to be the simplified version of the name when they immigrated. But
it's Craig's fault.
Yes. I'm just glad that I got it out. It's a beautiful name. I always have been like, oh, that looks so complex. And it definitely isn't what I thought it would be. But Warnemendi. And Lauren is an author. And we are so excited to have you here today.
Thank you. This is really cool.
So Lauren has written two books. And we are going to get to those in just a minute, but we like to start with your three books. So what are three books that have been highly influential in your life that you just love and want to share with us?
So it's a good thing that I've been listening to the podcast for a while, because I'm like, okay, think.
It's so hard.
So I finally decided, I'm like, I'm going to pick out three books that were particularly, I hate the word impactful, but it's true. They were impactful to me at a certain point in life. Mm-hmm. And the first one was Jane Eyre, Charlotte Bronte. Mm-hmm. So I read that one, I think it was my senior year, like right toward the end of my senior year. And the thing I remember particularly, besides the fact that I read it through, was I immediately went back to the beginning and read it through again, which I don't think I had ever done before. And it just gripped me. I mean, completely gripped me. And I was familiar with it. I think I might have already seen the BBC. It was the Timothy Dalton and Sarah Clark miniseries, A&E. I had loved that. That was wonderful. But the book was even better. And I think one of the biggest things that has always stuck with me with this book is... and hopefully we aren't doing spoilers with classics. Is that, how do we, but at one point where she has to make a decision and her emotions are completely pulling her in one direction.
Yeah.
And she realizes that she can't go with that. She is not sane at that point. She is, she has to go with the foundational truths that she had believed when she was not emotionally swayed.
Right.
And that's how she comes to the decision she needs to come to.
Yeah. That reminds me of that quote, believe in the darkness what you have seen in the light.
Yes. Yeah.
I always tell my kids that. And I'm like, when things are dark, like, you have to just rely on what you knew to be true when things were light.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, that has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
My emotions, my feelings about the matter are all over the place. But that truth is still the same.
Yeah.
And that was something I clung to and have always clung to, but just having it put into words in a book was just amazing to me. So that was one. And then,
can I say something about Jane Eyre real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's this woman on Instagram, and I will post a link in the show notes because she's so funny to me, but she does these little bits where she is different classic literary characters going to therapy. So like, she has one on Mr. and Mrs. Macbeth going to therapy, and she's so funny because at one point she's like, now tell me, is this blood in the room with us right now? And then she's talking about like the state of their marriage, and she's like, now you guys said divorce was off the table, correct? Yes. Yeah, no, you guys are great for each other. And so, but she's just so dry, and so sometimes she's the therapist, but sometimes she's the person. So she, for like Pride and Prejudice, she's Elizabeth coming and talking about her conversation with Charlotte about the engagement and just like that whole brouhaha. But she does Jane Eyre, and she's done a couple, which I just absolutely love, because Jane has some incredibly unhealthy relationship moments, as you referenced. And so just those are the moments where she's like at the therapist and she's like, and like, I love this girl's manner. I don't know why. My brain always is confused, because I hear that it's like inappropriate to call people girls, but I feel like if they're like at least a decade younger than me, they feel like girls, even though I'm not saying that they're six, but this is just something that ticks in my head. Is like, am I offending people? I'm not trying to. She is a female. She's a woman. I think she's probably 30, but she looks younger. And
the woman on the podcast.
Yeah, the woman who's who does these videos. Yeah. So this woman who is just delightful, she does these. She also, and this is totally unrelated, but she also does PR people, like, for current day news events.
Oh, great.
And those are really funny. So she'll just be like, you know, answering the phone as the PR for this actor or politician, and then it'll be that actor or politician. She'll be like, oh, hello, yes, no, I'm so glad you decided to check in after you opened your mouth. And then she'll like have this conversation about whatever their thing is, and in most of them she quits at the end of the phone call. Like, she's like, this is the next person's problem and they're starting on Monday. But it's actually a humorous way to stay up with some of the current events that are happening. Because I don't follow a lot of that stuff, and then she'll do this and I'll be like, well, now I want to know what they said. but I'm going to send you the videos for Jane Eyre when we get done with this, because they are hysterical.
I would go for those. Let's see. So, second book?
Yes.
You want a second? Are we ready for second book? Okay. So this was Green Dolphin Street by Elizabeth Googe, which was the first Elizabeth Googe book I read. And I think it was one of the first books I remember where it hit on so many levels, just completely absorbed me into the world, into the story, into the characters, you know, where you were just immersed in this, you know. I wanted to go to New Zealand immediately.
Yeah.
You know, and still haven't. But, you know, it's funny because I remember I finished it. I was on a mission trip to Ukraine, actually, at that point. That was 1993. So I still have the memory of finishing the book and where I was when I finished the book.
That's awesome.
Funny thing is, I've read numerous other Googe books since then and have loved them all. I've reread like some of the Elliot family ones. I have never reread Green Dolphin Street. And I don't know. There's a couple books like that in my life where I'm like, I want to reread it, but I don't. You know, it's like it changed me so much or affected me so deeply that I can't imagine
reading
it. Yeah.
But I own it. Have to own it.
Yay.
Can't not.
Have your girls read it?
Not yet, no. Evie, my second, might, but she would probably... It's funny, because they're... Like, Claire loves the sci-fi fantasy stuff.
Oh.
And so anything that's more realistic fiction, she's a little more like, eh, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
If you push me to it. They'll say, is it a good book? You know? Who dies? And no, thank you. So we'll see. It may be a few years before they actually go for that.
So that might be a good discussion. Maybe to wait until they do it or something like that, so you can pull it back in. That would be good. Yeah. Okay, and now for your third book.
So the third one is Robin McKinley's Deerskin. Robin McKinley wrote, probably the first one I ever read of hers was Beauty. Retelling of Beauty and the Beast. And I've loved most of her books. A lot of fairy tale retellings. So she was one of the first ones I read that was like, oh, wow. Oh, that's kind of cool. You know, taking a fairy tale and doing a retelling of the fairy tale. And so Deerskin is one of those. I will caveat is this is one I read it probably my final year of college. And I would not recommend it for teens. I'm sure there are plenty of teens out there who have read it. My girls have not. I would definitely put it up there in, you know, more adult fiction, not because she's graphic or anything, but just because of the content that she is dealing with. You have some really traumatic events happening. But she does it so beautifully and so powerfully. It was one of the first fairy tale retellings I read that she got the concrete detail things of life, you know, like women have menstruation cycles. It wasn't that she was going into graphic detail of it, but it was just the fact of, oh, hey, that's real stuff that you can actually incorporate real life things into a book, into a fairy tale, into a fantasy story, that it doesn't have to be just something off in the abstract and not related to reality. So that was the second book that I read through and then immediately went to the beginning and reread it again.
But sometimes Inara and I will check in with each other on where we're at in a book if the other person has already read it, and I'll be like, you know, yep, they just finished this 7-day hike, And once again, nobody had to pee.
I know. I mean, it made me think, now I'm like super conscious about it when I'm reading books or writing. I'm like, no, not that we need to talk about the bathroom on a regular current. Mm-hmm. In fact, we don't want to.
But does it even fit?
Exactly. Like,
is there even space for the reality of human bodies?
Exactly.
I love that. Well, thank you. So you said that was a fairy tale retelling, that's your jam. So what got you interested in fairy tale retellings? And not interest, obviously you said that book did, but like what got you thinking, I could / should do this myself?
Right. Well, I've always loved fairy tales, like straight up Grimm's fairy tales, you know, from the time I was little. And then I kind of wanted to write for many years, you know, from the time I was probably fourth, fifth grade. But I'd say it was probably reading some of these fairy tale retellings like McKinley's, and that I was like, ooh, what would be another, especially like Deerskin, I was like, what fairy tale is that? And she lets you know, she has a note about which one it's. I think the story Bearskin, there's a really pretty picture book called Bearskin that I think is kind of that same story. It's the same similar fairy tale. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was like, what's another fairy tale that's not well known that I haven't seen a retelling of? And I had grown up with a book that had the story of Maid Maleen. So I was familiar with it, but at that point in time, I didn't know any other stories that had been written.
I am not familiar with that one, so.
Yeah, yeah. And it was one I had always loved. And so I started playing around with it. And this would have been, it was right when Craig and I got married. So literally that year before, and as we got married, that I was starting to write out a story, a rewritten tale of Maid Maleen. So that's where it started. Just a question of where you want me to go from there.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, tell us your story of writing them, and because it was a journey, right? Because that was the first year you got married, and then you recently published. Right. So
the initial story, I had it pictured in my head of kind of like three parts to the story, and yeah, I'm thinking, I had no aspirations of what I was doing with it. I just wanted to write it. And Craig got in on it quite quickly, because we always talked books and stories and writing, telling stories, things like that. And very soon he's like, okay, it's not just going to be a romance. You can do so much more. I mean, do more with it than just a romance. Of course, I was newlywed and it's like, oh, romance, you know.
Puppies and rainbows.
Exactly. But he, you know, has good advice on things like that. And the more we talked ideas and we spent vacations planning out three-year wars as to exactly what happened during the 3 years that my POV point of view character was in a tower, because she didn't see the war, but I knew eventually she was going to get out of the tower and go through a country that had been devastated by this war. And so I kind of needed to know what had happened.
No. And back to the comment that we had earlier on, like the fact that women menstruate and the fact that people have to pee, like something that always, and I don't know if I have not read your books yet all the way through. Charlessa has, but I'm enjoying what I've read. So my point is, I don't know if you address this in your book, but something about wars specifically that always gets me in books is, where are the bodies?
Yes.
Like, you get to the end of the war and it just is kind of like tied up in this bow. Oh, the war's over and we all can move on. But I'm like, there's carnage after that. Like, I really wish that more books would address that reality, because that's also the reality that the town people have to deal with, right? Like, somebody's got to bury all these bodies. Somebody has to figure out what we're going to do with this and clean up the mess so that the whole town isn't now just lost to disease.
Right.
And so just that conversation around, like, what does really happen in war and after war, I think is an important one to have for authors.
Especially when, you know, if we were living in a war-torn country, we would have a much better grasp of this, but we wouldn't be writing books. So yeah. We're ready.
Yeah, that was my other thought is like we don't want to just romanticize war to people, making them think it's just this like clean cut, nothing yucky for most people situation when there's real damages and loss and cleanup and suffering.
Well, and underlying stories that were being told, you know, not always the truth was coming out every time. You know, so, and I think Lauren touches on that in book number two a lot about how the different stories, oh, this is what I know. And and the main character is trying to place that together and how many times we're in that same boat, but we have technology of the same boat of that, putting the pieces together to get the full story or the best full story that we can.
The girls and I are just wrapping up listening to A Little History of the World, which I swear, have you read this, Lauren?
No, I don't know that one.
It is one of my favorite historical overviews that I've ever read, and it is narrated by one of my favorite narrators, and so it sounds like a grandpa is just telling you history. Nice. But basically this man who was a historian met this little girl and started corresponding with her, and like they were talking about history, and then he realized that like history needed to be accessible to kids, and so he wrote this book. And it just, it's this historical overview up until World War II. But we're literally in the last two chapters right now. And in the second to last chapter, I really, no, did we finish it yesterday? And I just didn't realize it. We may have finished yesterday because we were in the second to last chapter. And he said, he was talking about like how World War I ended and his opinion of that. And then he says, but please wait until the next chapter to hear how my opinion has changed. And so then he, like, it gets to the next chapter. And basically, like, it's a really good lesson in propaganda because he's like, I was a child during World War I and in Germany. And this was what everybody said. This is what I believed was the reason different things happened the way they did. And oh no, we stopped 10 minutes before it was done because we had to leave for dance class. Okay. So my brain is like, I know we didn't finish. I would have mourned it. So we're so close, but we are in the last chapter now. But he was talking about how this is what was told to everyone. And as humans, we don't feel that we have any reason to question things we lived through. Mm-hmm. And we have to. And I was just like, oh, there's like so many good lessons here. And I just love how he talks to the reader and he's not condescending and he gives really wise advice. And but just that lesson that like people who lived through World War I in Germany. And so then the girls and I, this is why we ran out of time because we paused it to talk about The Elephant in the Garden, which we read last year and absolutely loved. But in that book, we get a really good scene of these two German families that are related. And so the parents of the main family that we're in are talking with the aunt and uncle, and they're clashing because the aunt and uncle are totally buying all of the anti-Jew propaganda that is being sold them, and the other family is more resistant to it. And they're just like, this is ridiculous, like you cannot possibly be believing this. But just watching how the tides were turned and how influences, like people were influenced and came to believe some of the things they did. So I really loved that we went from having seen that happen in that fiction book to seeing it happen to a true person who is being honest about how they've experienced history, which also helps you to understand like why history books don't agree. Because people have different opinions based on what side they were on and what they were learning about it. And so, yeah, so I just cannot recommend A Little History of the World enough. It's so good. It's just this little book in reality, but we've dragged it out over 2 years. It was our car book for a long time. And then I was like, no, we really need to finish this and then dive into the next book. So
we have to figure out what next.
We're like intentionally listening to a chapter a day right now. And it's just, it's been a really nice last 2 weeks and I'm going to miss it. I may just start back at the beginning with the boys and be like, let's just listen to this as our new car book.
I think that's the beauty of having fiction and history together. Yeah. Is putting this together. And I think even Laurie, in your first book that you recommended, your Jane Eyre book, I think you're right. You found a tidbit of truth that you knew already, but then you saw it in a fiction book and it allowed you to really anchor yourself more in that truth that you knew.
That's been huge for me consistently for years and years, that the way I can really internalize truth is if I have a story to attach it to. Mm-hmm. And so much of just writing, the course of writing the Daughter of Arden trilogy was grappling with some of those truths and some of those questions and some of those, and it's like, how would this play out in this story? And so over the years, I mean, it took me years to even get the stories written. So much of the process of it was happening in my head. Mm-hmm. And as different things happened over time, it was always kind of coming back to this world that was in my head and these characters and what would happen if they ran into this and how would, so it's kind of like your mental therapy going on in your brain. Mm-hmm. So I always have Arden. I have the nation of Arden and these kingdoms that, when I would come across people and be like, how would that person play out the story? Or this really obnoxious person in my life, I could immortalize them in fiction and no one will ever know. Who needs to write a memoir? You just put them into fiction.
Oh, I love that. So I think I jumped the gun and have not introduced your books. So you wrote a series titled The Daughter of Arden. Mm-hmm. Book one was Exile. Mm-hmm. And book two is Wandering, and they've both released from Bandersnatch Books.
Yes.
And then book three is coming this year, correct?
Yes. Like November 28th. And there we confirmed go. With mm-hmm. Carrie from Bandersnatch Books that it has gone to print.
Woohoo!
All woo-hoo. That. And yes, it will be published November 28th. Yes, that is the date.
How exciting. And then all three of your babies will be out in the world.
I know.
So what do you use to process all life, since they're all out in the world?
Next up, we have a book of short stories, which reads remarkably like a memoir. Oh, man. So you had the absolute joy in this process of working with your daughter as your illustrator. Two daughters, both daughters as illustrators. Tell me about that process.
Yeah. And that was so cool, too. It's just one of those. It's like, why did it take 25 years to write to finish writing this trilogy? And I think one of the reasons was just for that.
Yeah.
God knew that this would give us the opportunity to do this together. Not only that, one of the reasons I finally finished it was the third book that was just waiting and waiting in my head. was that my oldest daughter, Claire, had gotten to an age where she's like, well, I want to read them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, I think mm-hmm. you're old enough that you can start reading them. And turned out she was plenty old enough. So she read them, and then Evelyn got around to them too. And so they were both teenagers by the time they were reading them. And then as we moved toward we can actually get these published,
mm-hmm.
The girls, their art had just expanded beautifully, just over the years. They both were really good at just picking up things, working on things. They were constantly, that was our morning time thing. Would I be reading and they're drawing and drawing and drawing. And funny thing, it kept improving.
Shocker.
Yeah. So early on in the discussions with Carrie and Rachel and Annie Beth from Bandersnatch Books, it was like, oh, we'd love to use the girls' illustrations as like chapter headings. That would be really cool. Mm-hmm. So we had planned that out from the beginning. It ended up, what was really cool is we were trying to figure out what to do for the covers. And at that point, Evelyn was a freshman. Yes, she was a freshman. And she was taking a graphic design class. And mm-hmm. the kids had said, there's no way. We are not doing covers. We are not professionals. And understandably, you know, Banderstash Books is like, yeah, we want to make sure we get somebody who can really do it. And so we kept looking at different artists and, oh, maybe that would work. Maybe that would work. Meanwhile, Evie's just playing around on Photoshop and just putting out pictures because that's what you do. Yeah. And how about, what do you think of this? Oh, let's look at this. Oh, this is an idea. And, you know, so we're going back and forth on different ideas. And I think it was February of 2022. I was with Carrie and Rachel for a conference. And I'm like, okay, well, here's Evie's latest idea. Well, we had just listened to a seminar. It was actually with John Hendricks, the illustrator. And he had talked about, he had come up with these two terms that he had created. One is glyphics and veridic. So glyphic and veridic. So he was looking at Tolkien's illustrations particularly, and you know how the glyphs are the letters. And Tolkien did the art that he preferred and the art that he did himself was very more like graphic design. You know, you've got symbolism and structure, but it's not supposed to look realistic. It's supposed to look representational. And so John was calling this glyphic, you know, as you know, talking about like propaganda posters, but just, you know, like graphic design posters and things like that. And then veridic is the idea of something that is realistic picture painting that you see on a lot of beautiful covers, you know, fantasy novel covers and different covers like that. And what we realized was what we wanted was something glyphic, representational. And that was what Evie was pulling off as kind of, she was doing the, it's pretty common now, it's kind of the shadow box.
I really like it.
The covers. And so I pulled out her latest example. I'm like, well, you know, like, so something, and we all looked at it and it just kind of was like, that's and we'll have it. So she pulled that off. And then Claire was the map maker. So she was my designer. She took my old scratched up map with all the mess and made it into something that looked like something out of Tolkien.
Nice. That's exciting.
And the map is helpful. It's nice to have that in there. So I'm glad you included
that. I do love the map. I was going to ask you who had made the map because I'm such a fan of maps and map makers. And my girls are always doing the rice method of map making, which is really enjoyable. Are you familiar with that?
Like colored rice? Like mosaic?
No, you take like a quarter cup of rice and you just pour it on a piece of paper and then you trace it. And so you end up with like your little islands over here and your main body over here. And then they had watched some map makers videos on like, you know, this is how you draw mountains. This is how you symbolize the beach. This is how you symbolize this, that, and the other. And you got to add some trails. And they end up being very like Tolkien looking maps by the time they're done. But I love how much detail people can put into maps and also how little and how they're both effective. Like they both tell you where things are and what's happening. And I really love having maps. I think that it's a shame anytime a book skips the map opportunity and you have people going from one place to another.
I don't know where you are.
I know. It's like, are you a million miles away? Are you 5 miles away?
I'm currently reading Kim, Rudyard Kipling's Kim with my friend John. And I'm sitting there going, okay, wait. All right, I know what city is in. So we're like, where's Google Maps? Okay, where's the country? I want to know exactly where they are.
That is a help for real places is Google Maps for sure. But I love the fantasy maps for other worlds.
Good ones out there.
So you said that your daughter was old enough to read them. So what age range would you say these books are targeted for?
I recommend that you're at least 13 before starting them. That said, a friend of mine, her 10-year-old has currently read the first two and was totally fine. I don't know that, because I mean, Charlissa, you could probably say better. I mean, it's hard for me to look at it from my perspective. I'm like, there's some intense things. I know they're a lot less intense than a lot of books out there. But
Right.
And especially as, you know, you move along, the themes get, there's more complex themes of what's happening and trying to understand this is going on and this.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Nothing, this is not me speaking against your friend, but I am definitely in the camp that older is often better for so many of these books because there are so many beautiful books written for 10-year-olds with the emotional intelligence of a 10-year-old that help a 10-year-old to discern and understand what's going on in the world around them. And having been a very advanced reader, I also know that there are books that I could read that gave me no value at that age because I did not have the life experience. I didn't have the life experience at 13 to really get much of anything out of War and Peace, which is why I stopped it halfway through because I was like, well, this book hasn't picked up. But I, you know, I was like 12 or 13 at the time. And just because I could read it didn't mean that it was the best choice for me at that time. And now I go back and read some books that I know I read super young and then never read again. And I'm like, man, this would have probably been really good to read at 16 and 17 instead of 11 and 12. And we're just talking about classics here. But so I think even with fiction, I think that people, this always gets me too. When mothers say, I'm looking for a book that will take my kid longer than an hour to read. And my question is always why?
That's
like
true.
As a kid, I loved the thrill of having read 20 books in a week. That was something that I was doing that nobody else around me was doing. And I didn't care that it only took me an hour to get through Charlotte's Web. Like, I don't know if that was one that I got through in an hour, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like the books that were appropriate for that age range, there's a feast of them. There is an absolute feast. So let's be giving those books to our kids. And there's so much good middle grade fiction and fantasy and all of this being written now that they're not lacking. And so, yes, they may not have a lot of books that are taking them 2 to 3 to 4 days to get through. But why are we using that as a measuring stick? And then I feel that we truly are robbing our kids when they're later teens because there's nothing new to read. Then they get to the point where they're like, okay, well, my mom let me read all the clean YA books that she knew about when I was 12 and 13. And so now that I'm 16, 17, 18, I feel like there's no good books out there. And so I just become frustrated. And then I drift from having been a voracious reader to this doesn't interest me because there's nothing left that's new. So I really like to save books with YA. I obviously YA is a genre and not a reading level, but I always encourage people to just as like a first marker to use the age of the character in the book because their maturity and their life decisions and experiences will probably mirror your child at that age much better. And so while it may not hurt a 13-year-old to be reading a book about a 16-year-old, it would really benefit the 16-year-old to be able to read a book about a 16-year-old. Because Inara was about 14 when she was like almost 15. And she was like, I'm tired of reading about 11 to 13-year-olds. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, I got books for you, girl. Don't even worry about it. But I was waiting for her to be ready to feel like they're no longer my peers. I'm ready for my peer group now. And then I had all those books that I'd saved because I hadn't given them to her at 12 and 13, even though she could read them. I kept her reading the 12 and 13-year-olds. So, yeah, I think that that 14 to 15 line is generally like where they start being like, I want something more. I want something like I want to change friend groups.
Yes.
And that's a great time to do it. And these look like they would be excellent books for a changing friend group.
And hopefully ones that you would want to reread. You know, like the books I like to reread. We've had a discussion on that in another group I'm in recently. It's like, what books do you like to reread? I'm like, I like the ones where it's more, the story is more about the characters and what's going on in their lives and the conversations than it is the action points, you know?
Yeah.
And so I, my hope and is that that's, and it seems like from reaction I'm getting from people, that's the kind of story there. It's like, oh, I need to reread this. I want to reread this because I need to, you know, be caught up again before I get to the third one, or, you know, but it's, they want to reread it. You know, you want to go back and visit with these characters again and spend time with them, which is good because I did set her as, she's a little older. She's like 18 at the beginning of, you know, except for flashbacks. Okay. And I don't know why I originally set it at that, except that it just seemed unrealistic for a teenager to be going through what she was going through. I think that's a cultural shift. You know, when YA was first being put out, you know, people were getting into deep relationships and marriage earlier in life. But
No, I love that. That's great. So I'm excited for book three to come out in November. And I own books one and two, and I will hopefully have read them by then and be able to jump into the ending. That'll be very exciting. And I love that you were able to do these covers and the interior art with your daughters. That's just so special. It's a complete family project. So over the years, I know that you weren't necessarily writing these to publish these, but they were still something that you were really intentional about. So how were you intentional with prioritizing the time to write? And then I know that you speak very highly of The Habit.
Yes.
So can you tell us more about The Habit?
Well, starting with The Habit is the reason why the books actually got finished. So, I'll start there. Anyway, I joined The Habit. So The Habit is an online writing community headed up by Jonathan Rogers, who is well-known through The Rabbit Room. He wrote the Wilder King trilogy.
Which are kids' books that my kids absolutely adore. They're a modern, not quite modern. They're basically if like King David and Mark Twain, like if Mark Twain wrote about King David in Mark Twain settings, that's what you would get. Or King David retellings set in the Deep South with a bunch of gators.
Like people ask, how do you come up with your world? And he'll be like, I just based it on Georgia where I grew up.
Yeah. It wasn't too hard.
But I joined that community in 2019, and it was one of those, I'm like, maybe I can actually get this book finished. So the third book was just sitting there. So the first and the second, sorry, I'm jumping all over the place time. So the first one probably whipped off the first draft of that within, I mean, I know it was before we had kids, which 7 years before we had kids. Our firstborn daughter, was born in 2002 with trisomy 18, a chromosomal disorder. And she lived 6.5 years. And in the course of that, we had our second daughter and third daughter. And then I was pregnant with our son when we lost her. Thanks. Her birthday was actually the 27th of September. She would have been 2021. This year.
Wow.
Which is weird to think about. I don't have a kid that old. What do you think? But all that to say, you know, just life, things like having kids, having special needs kids, where we're, you know, in and out to doctor appointments and things like that. And then toddlers and all of that was happening with that. I didn't write a whole lot during those years. And somehow managed to eventually finish Wandering, the second one, by it would have been finished probably by 2014, which is our family went to Mexico for 2 years at that point. And it was also that point too where I'm like, this is just really long. And not that that's bad, but I don't think this is one book, you know? So suddenly I was sitting there with the question of, okay, well, what does that mean? So when I joined The Habit, I started making connections with other writers. And for one thing, got a boost of confidence from writing exercises and getting feedback from fellow writers just in all walks of life going, oh, please, we want to know more. And there's one exercise I wrote that was just one of my side characters happened to be the main character in it. Like, who is this person? We want to know more about him. And it was just that boost I needed to go, oh, people want to hear these stories. This is worth it. And it's about the same time that Claire was old enough that she was wanting to read it. And two of the gals and I formed an accountability group. And we've been writing letters to each other for, well, since 2019 now, fall of 2019. You know, just so every week we have our check-in. And they were two of my first beta readers for the third book. So, well, they read the first two, first of all, because the drafts were already done, and were able to say, yes, they would work as separate novels. Because that was one of my questions. I'm like, would these work as three separate books? Could mm-hmm. that work? Could that happen? Right. And they're like, yeah, there's definitely an arc in each one. You know, it can follow. So it took about 9 months, actually, for the third book to get written, which, considering it's the longest, was kind of impressive. In terms of time and making time for it and stuff, I think I was just on an adrenaline rush in some ways. And the kids were old enough, too, that they were starting to get engaged more in doing their own writing and doing their schoolwork, that there was a pretty strong motivation to actually get it into written form.
Yeah.
So I'm still not very well organized in terms of a writing habit, even though I've been in the habit for, you know, however many
years.
We've talked a lot in that group about seasons. You know, you go through seasons of life mm-hmm. and seasons of writing, and mm-hmm. you have to let things lie fallow sometimes. And mm-hmm. I've realized that over the course of this past year, as we've been getting these books into print, my biggest thing has been the editing process. You know, as we just work through, okay, what else can we smooth out? What can we clean up? What can we make more accessible? So those are, that's kind of where I've been
For the last year. That's fantastic. I love the accountability and support mm-hmm. that you had. Mm-hmm. Inara is a writer and writes a lot, and she recently so her grandparents, who are very supportive, mm-hmm. told her that they would help finance getting the book that she's currently writing printed, like copies for family members mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, and she froze. It was meant to be supportive, and it's beautiful, and she really appreciates that they're going to do it, but I think all of a sudden she felt pressure to not let them down, right? To not waste their money, not have this whatever. So she has been in a 4-month writer's block. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that is when we found out Amanda and their family were moving. And so they were grieving, losing their best friend that they see all the time. And Addie and Gemma and Inara basically are that writing support group. And so they are always reading new chapters and in voices. Like, Gemma's a very, very theatrical reader. And so that's Inara's been feeling that good pressure from Addie for new chapters. Like, come on, I want to read more of this story. I love this story. But even just, I think Addie helped to keep it alive and fresh. Mm-hmm. Constantly talking about it. Okay, I understand that you're not writing right now, but let's review what I love about it. Let's review this character and who they are. And so it was all really present. And then Addie moved on Sunday mm-hmm. and the girls have just been, you know, pretty sad this week. Mm-hmm. But last night Inara started writing again. And I came in from having a conversation with Amanda because Amanda leaves on Friday when their house closes, and she's staying with us because who wants to stay in a creepy old barn house all alone? And so I came in from the back porch and Inara's whole face was glowing, and she's like, I wrote a chapter. And then 10 minutes later, she's like, I just finished the second chapter. I was almost done with it when you came in. And this morning I got up and she's like, I wrote a third chapter. That's 3 chapters in 24 hours, Mom. It feels right again. Okay. And so it's just, I'm so happy. But I hear what you're saying about the support groups being so powerful in helping you with that forward momentum and accountability, and even to just have people rejoice over what you're doing and celebrate with you, I think is so important to just keep that momentum going. So Jonathan Rogers, I wanted to say about the Wilder King trilogy, since we touched on it, for people listening. These books are beloved as family read-alouds, and dads especially love this series. And so I highly recommend that if your husband is doing read alouds or you have a car read aloud and you're really hoping your husband will get engaged in it as well, to try the Wilder King trilogy and see what happens. But Jonathan Rogers is he's a gifted writer. I subscribe to his newsletter because I love reading just the little bit that he sends out every week. I feel just makes me a better human. And, you know, imaginary writer, because in my head, even though I don't write, like, I could. Isn't that how it is for everybody, right? Like, if I ever got around to it, I could write. So I'm just learning by listening
to Jonathan. I was following the newsletter for a couple years, and he was just starting up the online community. I'm like, oh, I would love to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Well, so my justification to finally step over the line and engage he has this grammar for writers course, and I'm like, I'll use it for homeschooling because we need a grammar course.
Yes.
And then on the side, I'll get to do the writing stuff with the group. We never finished the writing class, the grammar class. But I will say, I mean, I totally got into the writing community and have learned so much. Just so practical. I think that's one of the biggest things. And he teaches so clearly that it's just the accessibility of going, oh, I can actually do this. This is something I can do. But the other fun thing is that in the course of it, 2021 or so, they started a student cohort. So they have, if a student takes a class, one of the writing classes for students, they can then join this student group. So Evie joined on, so my second daughter, and then eventually Claire jumped on too. And that, I mean, their writing has just blossomed, you know, to the point that it's like, it affects all their academic writing, you know, positively. You know, it's like, don't worry about trying to take this is how you write academic papers. Just do the creative writing class and you will learn everything you need so that you can then write your academic papers. But it's like clear communication, I think, was one of the biggest things.
Yeah. I also want to let people know, if you do sign up for his newsletter, he will periodically just offer free classes on specific topics, and he will share those in the newsletter. You just register for it. It's no credit card. It's free. And then you can go attend this Zoom class, and those are very helpful as well. So if you're on a budget and you just can't afford anything official right now, I would still recommend signing up for the newsletter and just taking advantage of all the free content that he offers that can really just help light a fire and teach you new things.
Yeah.
So
I think that speaks to finding your people. Yes. You know, Lauren was able to find your people to help you develop your gifts and talents that you had been placed inside of you. But yeah, we need to do that. We need to find our people, be it accountability or just somebody else just to rely on.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we need that.
So Lauren, do you have any unpopular book opinions? I know that that's a big ask to come out on podcast with your unpopular book opinion. I think I've shared mine on the podcast before, but you asked me to like clarify what I meant this morning, so I'll share it again. My unpopular book opinion is that The Wind in the Willows is for adults and not children. And I think I've pontificated on it before, so I won't now, but that's my unpopular opinion. Do you have any unpopular opinions you'd like to get off your chest?
There you go. So I don't know how unpopular this is, but I've found more and more, and I'll blame it on Craig. It's all Craig's fault. That I can't stand a book that is just about the romance. Like, the whole point, and especially, especially when there's some sort of contrived obstacle, you know, some sort, you know, this is the whole book is riding on the fact that they aren't talking to each other about something, which is kind of funny because there is a romance in the third book. It's a fairy tale retelling. You gotta have something. And there are, you know, misunderstandings of what is actually the truth and withholding of information. But but it's like, you have to have more to the story than that. It can't just be about that. There has to be bigger things at stake. You know, life is not just that thing. And so many fairy tale retellings are, that's really all it is the guy and the girl are going to get together in the end. And I'm like, it's not. A fairy tale is so much more. There's so much more to a fairy tale than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, is that there's so much more to a fairy tale than the romance. Yeah.
So your engineer husband brought out the gotta have the war, we gotta have it. So like as the book was not being worked on, how much was it talked about? I mean, you said you talked about it early in your marriage, but then because he had to have an investment. I mean, that's what our accountability partners and our spouse should do. They have some investment in our.
Yeah, Craig's throughout the years was always like, so when are you going to publish the book and make millions? You know?
I wonder.
But thanks for the encouragement. But yeah, I mean, our go-to conversations are ideas and whether it's theology, whether it's civil engineering, because he's a civil engineer, whether it's English literature, whether it's history, whether it, you know, cultural, political, whatever the topic, those are our go-to kind of conversations. And so stories too, and these this trilogy in particular, he was in it from ground zero. He was the one person that, I mean, I think I had one other friend that I let read the first book as a draft early on. But other than that, he was the only one reading any of it. Mm-hmm. And even that, like when I was working through the third one, he wasn't reading it as I was going along, but I was bouncing things off of him continually. It would be like, okay, what do we do with this situation? What's happening here? I've got these, this is what's going on. And like oftentimes he would bring up something or ask a question and I would just want to throttle him because I'm like, no, I can't do that. Cause if I do that, I have to rethink everything. But if I just let it go, my brain would start working at it. Mm-hmm. And suddenly a new idea would kind of dovetail with it and everything just opened up and made sense.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. what's kind of cool is now, you know, that the girls are up on it too. We haven't convinced my son to get into them yet. We're about cars, maybe. but now they're in on it too. Because as we're brainstorming, this is where we're at. Because we're looking at, so the trilogy is complete. It finishes the important arc of Maid Maleen, the main character. But there's like a bigger arc that could be tackled with other characters and other books. But it's all still in this world. I'm a one world person, apparently. But we're already talking through, you know, it's like, okay, what if this is what's happening here? How is this going to pan out? What makes sense? What can, so we're, that's just how we roll throughout, just the way we work and have worked for many years.
Yeah. That's cool. That's
so like great. Even the structuring of the tower, Shola, so you like the way the tower was
structured. I do.
That is thanks to Craig.
I can see that. I can completely see that.
Work? How thick can these walls be? What?
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much details. We talked about it earlier, how things were explained in your book that aren't normally explained, you know. How do they get out of the tower? You know, like that was a legit thing. How do they go to the bathroom for 3 years in the tower? That was like, when that got revealed, I was like, yes, like finally something that can make sense to me instead of just the fairy tale. So I probably owe that all to Craig. So kudos to Craig for like stepping up for me. But I can see it. Too bad that your son doesn't want to jump on board.
I mean, he keeps getting in on things. And we're like, John, you can't hear this part yet. You haven't read it. Maybe if I get it, you know, like, actually, if we can, we don't have any way of getting it onto audiobook yet, but perhaps someday, you know.
Yeah, that would be great.
That would be great.
So you have finished book three. Yeah. Do you have any new works in the works, or are you just taking a breather?
So like I said, there's these like basically two other books I have in my brain of something that could finish a bigger arc that would not be the main characters from Daughter of Arden, but in that same world. And they've niggled there for even, you know, 20 years ago, they were already sort of an idea. But so once I finished the third book, it was kind of like, okay, now I can get on to the next one. And that was in 2020. So I did November writing month. NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, no,
Yeah. I even gave myself, you know, I'll just do like half the number of words, but I'll do it. And we had a bunch from the habit. We just formed our own group and encouraged each other along the way. So I wrote a bunch of words and I'm like, oh, these are really cool characters and stuff, but I have no story. This is not a story. This is not, there's nothing happening. And I finally stumbled on something probably around Christmas, thanks to one of my accountability gals, Bethany, who said something and it clicked. I'm like, okay, I think I have the arc I need for this next book of what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I was going to get onto it this past summer. I wrote a short story that was backstory, so that was helpful.
Yeah.
So a lot of it has just been world building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Arden.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's really cool. Well, that's exciting.
So now I'm going to go through and think about which character she's thinking of writing a story. Like, which ones are they?
Yeah, that's fun. I just read an advanced reader copy for someone, and it's the first book in a series of potentially six.
Oh.
And the whole time I was like, okay, who's going to be the main character of the next book? Like, where are we going? Who are we priming to move into that position?
Yeah.
But that's always fun. So yeah. That's fun. I'll have to read it through the first time with that thought.
Yeah.
Then, like, who's this novella going to be about, or this new novel?
It may not be one of the characters in the current three books. But
okay,
it will come.
Well, good.
The side characters coming into it will still come into it, but yeah.
Well, perfect.
We'll see. I'm still learning as I'm going.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Thank you for sharing all of that with us, Lauren. Beautiful. I really appreciate it. We try to end our conversations nowadays by talking about self-care, and we have found that everybody agrees that we all go through wintering seasons, and it's just good to hear how other people have handled those seasons themselves, and then it can make you feel less alone when you're in one. So what is something that you do for self-care? In a hard season, not just like a normal, make sure I have chocolate 5 times a week sort of self-care.
I try to avoid that.
My self-care is I try to avoid having chocolate at every meal.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, I like to, you know, I like to make dinner. Hard season. I'm trying to think, you know, because I have been in hard season, like, what did I do to survive? I'm gonna say one of the things, and I think this probably has gone for the hard seasons too, there are two things. Last year I was over at my neighbor's, and I realized she had a little bird bath, and the birds were coming out, and she's like, you know, the birds like that, the bird bath, as much as they like bird feeders. I'm like, okay, I want a bird bath, because I haven't gotten a bird feeder because we have too many squirrels. I'm like, we don't want the squirrels, we want birds.
Yeah,
but we have so many birds right around here. And right outside, so our dining room table faces a big window, and the front yard, there's this Japanese magnolia, big old Japanese magnolia, and then the pine trees that the squirrels are loving right now. and so we put a bird bath under the tree, and just... it's so distracting, but it's so lovely to just guess I'm a hummingbird feeder. I'll just sit and just stare out window at the birds in the bird.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just so fascinating to me to just watch them come and engage with them and learn what they are. And it's just complete relaxation. Another one, I was just thinking, I'm like, I think another one for me has... for self-care has been conversations with friends, or family too, you know, the ones that I can really talk to and just be able to talk through, what's going on, you know, and scripture has always been, you know, that's kind of like my fallback on, especially, you know, like when we lost our daughter and things like that. It's like, if someone dies or if something really hard happens, it's like, okay, I need to read this right now. And just watching how God, you know, you don't even try to process it all. You just let things come out.
Yeah.
And just the beauty of the language just rises out of it, and the truths that are there.
Yeah. Mm. I love that. With the with the bird feeder, Amanda and I were talking yesterday, and she was telling me about this study. Well, so we were, my kids dance in the same town that their farmhouse is in. So she had driven out with us to do a few more things at the farmhouse. And on the way back, it was the most beautiful cloud show last night. Like the sunset in the clouds were all these shades of hot pink and orange, and Knightley just couldn't get enough of it. And we just kept talking about this. And I was talking about how good I feel it is for his nervous system on dance days to not have a lot of people in the car. Like most of his siblings aren't there. It's just Gemma. They're in different rows. And so he's just quiet looking at nature. And there's no bugs involved. And so he's more willing to do it. But this is something where he wouldn't just walk into the front yard and stare at the clouds because of the bugs, but this is a safe way to do it. And there's, you know, no distractions because he's not at home looking out a window or anything. He's just stuck in the car for 45 minutes both ways looking at the clouds. And Amanda was talking about this study that she had read on school students and test results, and that the test results were higher for kids who could look out a window while they were taking the test, and that remarkably the test results were equally as higher for kids who couldn't look out the window but had a photograph of nature in front of them on their desk. And she's like, what is it about nature that even just a picture of it changes things for us that much? And so I was thinking of that when you were talking about your bird feeder or your bird bath. That that it is distracting, but it's a good distraction. And who knows what the payouts have even been for your family on your nervous system, on anxiety relief, and all of that, just from having the opportunities to lose yourself and watching these beautiful little birds splash around.
They're so beautiful.
That's very cool. Thank you for sharing that with us. I like that. And the conversations, I think, especially for auditory processors, those are so valuable, because otherwise you can just have this crushing in your chest of like carrying your story and not even being able to hear it yourself to really process through what it means. And so I think that having safe people to share our story with are so important.
And I know, like, I know for me, it really helps to write things out if I'm just trying to process something. My mom calls it scribotherapy, you know.
Yeah.
But I find that maybe because of where I am in life, where everything happening, lots, you know, kids having, they're teenagers, but it's kind of like, I'm the facilitator. Let's make sure this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. I, it's almost more stressful to think about, okay, I need to sit and write this out because I don't have time to sit and write. But if I have someone I can talk to, then I can process it through. Clearer in my own mind.
I think that when we have something that's weighing on us and we're trying to write it out, there's no way our pen can keep up with our brain. And so it can be really challenging. But talking's easier. Well, that's great. So again, everyone, Lauren's books, The Daughter of Arden series, which would you say these are just written for girls?
I know a couple boys, like my nephew and my friend's son, who is John's age, read them and thoroughly enjoyed them.
Yeah, because so, they're not just romances. You're
you've got the
full world going on. So, Daughter of Arden.
They are don't highly be scared about the name.
Try them with your boys. Exile and Wandering, and those are available through Bandersnatch Books. And we appreciate all of you listening in and joining us today. And we will list all of these books that we talked about in the show notes and those funny YouTube videos with the therapy sessions for classic characters. And remember, the stories are truer than true.